Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In 1872, novelist Thomas Hardy, no friend of church or sanctimony, but a lover of the English countryside, set a novel on Christmas Eve. He called it Under the Greenwood Tree, and it rolls around class and country life, love and music. This year, it's the theme of the Christmas revels. This hour, On Point on Christmas Eve, an English country Christmas revels. You can join the conversation when it's dark and cold in the depth of winter. Are you ready for some revelry? Have you done it with the Christmas revels? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We've got a full house in the studio today for some live music and more in the tape deck. Patrick Swanson is here. Patty, Artistic Director of the Christmas Revels. Patty, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
George Emblem is here, Revels Music Director. George, welcome.
Thank you, Tom. A pleasure.
Dave Townsend is here, founder of the Mellstock Band of Southern England, Oxford, Taunton, Dorset. He's got his concertina, looks like a small accordion, along for the show. Dave, welcome.
Hi, thank you.
And Mary Casey is with us, singer and featured soloist in the Revels show this year. Mary, wonderful to have you here.
Thanks very much, Tom.
Well, that's some jolly music in the background, and Christmas Revels rolling out all over the country at this point, I guess. It goes a long time back here, but you've got them now in Cambridge, Massachusetts, Hanover, New Hampshire, Houston, Tacoma, Washington, Washington, D.C., Oakland, California, Portland, Oregon, Boulder, and Santa Barbara, California. That's a lot of revelry.
Yes.
where do these come from? What's it go back to?
Well, in 1971, our founder, John Langstaff, created it right here in Cambridge. But soon after, his daughter, Carol Langstaff, who lives near Hanover, New Hampshire, took it upcountry and created her own version of Revels in a more countrified way, and it's very much in the same style, in the very same model, but it has its own flavor. And then next was New York, and then Washington, D.C., and California, and it spread.
You've got a different theme every year and different themes around the country, but here this year, Thomas Hardy, what other kinds of subjects have you touched over the years, or themes have you brought to this winter solstice Christmas revelry?
This year we have the King and the Fool show. It's a medieval show that is now out in, I think, California. One of the other cities is doing it currently. Mm-hmm. French-Canadian show, which we did in 2003 or 2004, that's very popular. And at least one of the other cities has got that theme going this year.
In years past, I've seen even you had the Song of the Turtle or something kind of Sephardic Jewish show.
Voice
I must
of
have
the
seen
Turtle.
Voice of the
Voice
Turtle.
Voice of the
that's
Turtle right. was a group that we brought in for a show that was based on three fools. We called it the Celestial Fools, you know, the sun, moon, and star, and that took us, yeah. A lot of these shows take us to strange places where we look at the way that people celebrate the shortest day, and that one was certainly far away. It took us to the east, and we had these visitors who came in with a big cart and displayed their wares for us.
Strange and wonderful places year after year in this show. Yeah. And this year, Thomas Hardy. Tell us about how this theme comes into this year's performance. What's the story exactly?
Well, I can talk about it. This is George. Mm-hmm. I can talk about it from a musical end, and then Patty will talk about the literary end. Mm-hmm. We basically look for artists when we go to create these shows, and we look for themes that appeal to us both. And in this case, we went out and found the Mellstock Band. But we'd been talking about this particular theme for at least 15 years. I think it's been on the back burner for a long time.
Right.
One of the possibilities for a long time. And when we finally arrive at a decision on that, then we start to go through all the material, all the ideas, musical ideas. And I say this would work as a wonderful chorus piece. This would work as a great children's number. This would be a great audience number, a great dance number. And we assemble, we pile up all these building blocks of the show. And then we start to winnow through them. And meanwhile, Patty is developing a structure, a literary structure for it.
Which, in this case, this year comes from Thomas Hardy. We'll talk about the novel. It comes from Hardy himself, how that translates to the stage. But we want to hear some of this music. We've got something. Is this a Portugal tune here, Dave, yeah. Mary?
It's called Portugal Tune or Portugal New. And a lot of people will recognize this tune, and they may think they recognize the words as well, but it's an older version, a version that was being sung in country choirs, this particular one around Oxfordshire in England, in the 1830s, before it gradually metamorphosed into what we sing in our churches nowadays.
Well, let's take it away.
Okay.
Oh, come, O ye faithful, joyful and victorious, oh, come to Bethlehem. Hail in the Son, the King, the Saviour glorious, oh, come and worship, oh, come and worship, oh, come and worship in Bethlehem. Hail in the Son, the King, the Saviour glorious, oh, come and worship, oh, come and worship, oh, come and worship in Bethlehem. Oh, see him, your God, from heaven itself descending to save the sons of death. Rise in the morn, the night of sin is ending. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship in Bethlehem. Rise in the morn, the night of sin is ending. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship in Bethlehem. Oh, come, all ye faithful, join your hearts and voices. Oh, come to Bethlehem. Raise up the song while heaven and earth rejoices. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship in Bethlehem. Raise up the song while heaven and earth rejoices. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship. Oh, come and worship in Bethlehem.
And the concertina, little accordion, takes it right down. Dave Thompson of the Millstock Band from this year's Christmas Revels. Patty Swanson, you've got solstice as much as Christmas as the theme of so much of what the Revels do. And Thomas Hardy, famously, infamously, a kind of irreligious Englishman of his day, seen as almost sacrilegious in many of the things he wrote. How did you build a show around him? This sounds right out of the church.
That's right. I think what Thomas Hardy and Revels has in common is that they both sort of occupy this threshold position about religion. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Thomas Hardy, for all that he was gloomy and melancholy and, you know, that has this sort of overtone of despair, when it really comes down to it, you know, you're, the previous segment of your show is about hope.
Yes.
And I think, you know, when it really comes down to it, you see these glimmers of hope within his work. And Revels, you know, for all that sometimes it sounds religious, we use a lot of sacred music. We occupy this building in Harvard, you know, the Sanders Theater, which looks like a church, but
lovely
in fact,
old Civil War era memorial, mm-hmm.
And it has all the sort of trappings of a sacred building,
but it's
secular. It's a mm-hmm. kind of right on that cusp,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's true of the music too. That a lot of this music is sacred, but it has that kick that comes from the Saturday night, you know, barn dance, or and that's the area that we're interested in. I think that's where we started with this Hardy program.
Mary Casey, when you stand up and sing in Sanders Theatre, in The Rebels, what's the feeling? Secular, sacred? Do you feel that threshold space that Patty describes you as on there in The Rebels?
Oh, absolutely. It's a really glorious feeling, actually, when you're singing to this amazingly educated audience first. I mean, many of the people who come to Revels know the music, and if they don't know the music, they're totally open to learning it.
Mm.
So that's fabulous. You're singing to a group of people who are there to sing with you. I mean, if you think of music,
because
as
the
a,
audience does. They dance, they sing,
do.
They're part of the
they
affair.
They absolutely do. And, I mean, if I speak for myself, I mean, music for me is an invitation. It's a relationship. And you're not there, and I think this is very true of Revels. No one is there to perform for the audience.
Mm-hmm.
I think of every one of us as inviting the audience to join what we're doing.
And this time of year, when it's dark and it's cold, can you feel that special urge in the audience to
absolutely.
Of let it rip?
Absolutely. I mean, as cold as that building might feel when you go in and it's empty, it is warm within seconds, really, as soon as you start singing.
Oh, wonderful. We're talking about the Christmas Revels. We're reveling a little bit on this Christmas Eve, and we will have more. We'll go out with the Boar's Head Carol. The carol has been sung at Queen's College, Oxford, since the 17th century as the celebrated dish. The Boar's Head is born into the dining hall. Here's a 1978 recording all the way back with the baritone of Revels founder John Langstaff. The artistic director, Patty Swanson's here, music director, George Emlin, Dave Townsend of the Mellstock Band, and wonderful singer Mary Casey's here. You can join us as well, 800-423-8255. This time of year, do you just want to stand up and sing? 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Our steward hath provided this in honor of the King of Bliss, which on this day to be served is in Regency Atrio.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are reveling on this Christmas Eve with the Christmas Revels, an annual celebration around the country of the winter solstice and this year, Old English Christmas. Behind me right now, the Abbott's Bromley Horn Dance. And if you've seen it, you know it's very kind of mysterious. People back and forth in the dim stage, dimly lit stage, with the antlers of stags held above their heads. An ancient ritual for good luck in hunting the stag. Everybody needs that maybe this time of year. You can join us. How do you revel when the days are cold and the nights are long? Have you done it with the Christmas Revels? And wherever we hail from, whatever our traditions, do we still have a thing for the old hollyberry and caroling, crackling fire and song in winter? We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. Patty Swanson, describe this scene with this this music is accompanying on stage.
Well, the way that Revels does it is probably not too familiar to the people in Abbott's Bromley. The Abbott's Bromley people do this during the day in full sunlight, and they do it to practically any tune that comes up. It's a full-day event, and they travel a lot of miles with it, and they visit all the houses in the village. We do it to what's called the old tune, something that was discovered, and when the tune was put together with the dance, it turned into this rather ethereal moment.
It's spooky. They're in the gloom. They've got antlers
yeah.
held above their heads. They're back and forth on the stage.
That's right. It's a long line of the stag dancers. They're actually caribou, as they are in England.
Mm.
And behind them, there are these strange characters, the supernumeraries, who are a man-woman with a parasol, a little boy hunter, a fool, and a hobby horse. They're all sort of iconic archetypal figures from the Mummers' play. But they never say anything. And who knows, maybe once upon a time there was a play that went with this dance, or maybe the dancers were even, you know, supernumeraries to the mm-hmm. to the play. But there's something rather wonderful about this dance appearing and doing its figures, its serpentine figures, and then disappearing. It's like it's a sort of continuum. I imagine them sort of coming out of centuries past to us and then going back into the ether.
Mm. Dave Townsend, you're our English man at the table here. When you see that back and forth, does it make you want to get out your old, I don't know, longbow and arrow and head into Sherwood Forest? Does it get the old blood stirring for
well,
a stag?
Quite. It's a very strange moment. The wonderful thing about traditions like this is that they become what people need them to be, so that even in Abbots Bromley, it may have been connected with hunting, it may stretch even further back than that. Some folklorists thought that it did when they were first collecting the dance and writing about it. But then again, the present day thing, it's very much a celebration of the community in a very immediate way. When it's put together as a performance, as it is here, it becomes something else again. And I think this is the very nature of traditional music and dance, that it transforms itself and it informs whatever's happening to it, and it still retains its own initial original power, so that whatever gloss we, whatever dress we want to put upon it, it still retains whatever it had in the first place, but also becomes very immediate and very up-to-date at the same time.
George, the bringing back of the old is something, it's absolutely central, whatever the theme of any given year here. There's something about midwinter, the dark, the winter solstice, it makes us want to find those touchstones, in your case, in music and dance.
That's exactly what Revels is all about. Because what we try to do is find the best traditional music from whatever culture we're working in and bring it to the stage in a way that it's not a concert and it's not a theatrical performance, but it's some blend of the two. But the power of traditional material is something that we is right at the core of what we do. And when we take something like the Abbots Bromley Horn Dance or the what we're about to hear, the Sands Day Carol. Mm. Now, Sands Day Carol may be a 19th century tune, but the ideas, or it's a traditional tune which became popular in the 19th century, but the ideas go back to Druid, holly and ivy worship. And there are, of course, lots of references to the Virgin Mary in here, but it really is much older than Christianity.
So much of what we see at Christmas, an amalgamum of traditions across the years and even predating the religion itself. Sands Day Carol, Mary and Dave, I think you can do it for us. We'd love to hear it if you would be so very kind. Mary Casey singing here with Dave Townsend with the concertina, Sands Day Carol.
Oh, the holly bears a berry as white as the milk, and Mary, she bore Jesus all wrapped up in silk. And Mary, she bore Jesus, our Savior for to be. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly, holly, holly. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly. Oh, the holly bears a berry as black as the coal. And Mary, she bore Jesus, who died for us all. And Mary, she bore Jesus, our Savior for to be. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly, holly, holly. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly. Oh, the holly bears a berry as green as the grass. And Mary, she bore Jesus, who died on the cross. And Mary, she bore Jesus, our Savior for to be. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly, holly, holly. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly, holly, holly. And the first tree in the greenwood, it was the holly.
Live in our On Point studios on Christmas Eve is the Sands Day Carol with Mary Casey there, Dave Townsend, George Emlyn chiming in from the Christmas Revels. Makes me want to chime right in, and maybe you the same at home. Thank you so much. That's just absolutely wonderful, beautiful, that green holly. Let's go to Virginia in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Virginia. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to thank you for a wonderful show. I have been singing along while I've been on hold, and I just have a comment of, and I think there's a number of people like me in Cambridge. I'm a Revels enthusiast, maybe a Revels fanatic. I've been going, I think, for the last 15 out of 18 years
I've
lived here. And I discovered it first in a on a record in a small record shop in Michigan, and I sent the record to my brother, who's been going for 20 years in Washington, D.C., and this is the first year I always get seats so I can do Lord of the Dance and go out into Memorial Hall. And
this is the point at which everybody rises up and goes in long line dancing through the hall and out.
Yeah, and this is the first year my daughter did Lord of the Dance. And I saw John Langstaff on the solstice during the 25th anniversary revels, and I'm hoping I'm around to go to the 50th anniversary revels.
That's wonderful.
Anyway, thank you. It's a wonderful show, and it's part of my Christmas tradition.
Virginia, wonderful. Thanks. Long may you dance, and thanks for calling. Let's get another from Providence, Rhode Island, in Manuk. Manuk, you're on the air.
Yes, it's wonderful, Tom. And I want to thank Mr. Townsend. I have attended revels in the past, and it's wonderful. It's usually a packed house. And although I'm right now enjoying the English versions of some of the songs we sing as Americans, as I did in the, with a group of expats overseas, noticing that difference is, and celebrating is wonderful. But my question to your guests is simply, how do they do these two things? One, what does the community around the Boston area offer to produce this diverse program, such as the revels you did with the Caucasus, with Armenia, with Georgia? And the second thing is, I always love the participation of the audience, whether we're singing at one part or we're connecting with each other and dancing out for intermission together, 1,000 people moving in that direction.
Yeah, it's a wonderful thing to see and to be in the midst of, isn't it, Manuk? Let us pick those up, and thanks for your call. Patty Swanson, first to you. I mean, here you are performing this around the country. Heard Virginia say, you know, she's here listening in Michigan. Her brother was singing in Washington. Right. Does the performance depend on the locale, what you're drawing on, whether it's in Santa Barbara or Tacoma or Portland, Oregon, or you name it? Are you building it around who's there in the community, interest, their background?
Sometimes that happens. Sometimes it's right under your nose, and you don't recognize it for a while. We moved offices from Kendall Square out to Watertown, and it took us a little while to realize we were living in Little Armenia.
In Watertown, Massachusetts,
yeah,
you can't miss it for long.
That's right. I mean, there's the lavash and the, you know, the figs and everything around, all the grocery shops around there.
But, of course, every city across the country has its particular profile
exactly,
in that way.
Exactly. We just had the first revels in Santa Barbara, and Santa Barbara is doing it in, a town which is surrounded by the old missions and so on. So they're looking at Hispanic material that comes from the pre-Hispanic
beautiful
period
country there
as well. The coloration of each revels, every revels city is individual. They're all, independent 501c3s. They have their own boards and so on, but they're also culturally fed by the community that they live in. And that's very strong. It's interesting that the community that comes to the revels, are part authors of what happens within their community.
And George, whether they're authoring or just in the audience, that urge to get up out of the seat and to be singing around, dancing through the hall, is that uniformly part of the revels wherever they're performed?
It really is. And I think that if you've never been to a revels before and you walk in, and all of a sudden everybody leaps to their feet, you're astonished. You're completely flabbergasted as why everybody is doing this.
Where are we going?
Exactly.
Why are these people holding my hands?
Exactly. And I think it's a very powerful ritual which has taken hold. We not only take ritual from other cultures, we have actually established our own rituals within the Revels community, within the our performances so that the Abbott's Bromley Horn Dance people get that visceral response to it, and hearing the poem, The Shortest Day, the revels would not be the same without it, and certain iconic pieces like that. And leaping out of your seat and going out to dance, to Lord of the Dance, is one of those rituals, which is extremely important for us to have that those touchstones. We have to balance off the unfamiliar that Patty is talking about, the Armenian, unfamiliar to many of us, and Georgian, with the familiar touchstones that are, and that's true in everything that we do. It's part entertainment and it's part exploration.
Speaking of poetry, there's a poem recited from Thomas Hardy, who, of course, became famous for his novels, Far From the Madding Crowd, Tess, and more, and, of course, this one, Under the Greenwood Tree. But later in life, moved more and more to poetry. There's one called The Oxen that's recited in the Christmas revels here this year. And it kind of, it's maybe expressing some nostalgia for lost religious faith in a way, but nevertheless still open, still wanting.
Yeah, that's sort of where we came in, talking about, you know, Thomas Hardy's deep melancholy and so on. But but there is... there's something in the agnostic position there that has this gleam of hope.
It goes back to that nativity scene with the beasts, the animals around the manger, and traditionally thought of as kneeling at the manger, maybe. Could you recite for us, read for us, Patty?
Sure.
Thomas Hardy's The Oxen.
Christmas Eve and 12 of the clock. Now they're all on their knees, an elder said as we sat in a flock by the embers in hearthside ease. We pictured the meek, mild creatures where they dwelt in their strawy pen, nor did it occur to one of us there to doubt they were kneeling then. So fair a fancy few would weave in these years, yet I feel if someone said on Christmas Eve, come, see the oxen kneel in the lonely barton by yonder coombe our childhood used to know. I should go with him in the gloom, hoping it might be so.
Barton, a farmyard, coombe, a valley, and even now, when so fair a fancy few would dare to weave, maybe we're a little less, I don't know, open to the fantasy, but maybe we're not. And maybe if someone holds out that hand and says, come, let's go look for that kneeling ox, maybe we would.
Well, there is there's that great question posed there. And you know, I think religion in its old sense, you know, religio, the things that link together and go back into the past, was what he was more interested in, I guess what we're more interested in.
Mary Casey, in Under the Greenwood Tree, the novel, you're the object of desire. All the men in the chorus and around the town want your hand. You're the new, music teacher, come to town. And love and the sacred season get all kind of mixed up together. You must feel that in on stage.
Oh, I certainly do. Being the object of such attention is really a remarkable thing as people fight over me.
Yes, they fight over you. There's also a fight going on here in a way between tradition and modernity. There's a fight in the church in this story, in the town, over whether to bring a kind of early organ in.
That's correct.
Which is seen as a sort of a mechanical beast in a way.
Well, I actually think that's the larger battle that's really going on, as opposed to being over me, though I'm delighted to think that it's about me.
And you flounce very nicely on the stage.
It really is about high church meeting country church. And I think that when the parson brings Fancy Day to, as the new
your
music,
character,
correct, yes, when he brings Fancy Day to the town, to the village, she's the educated person. And she is, I think, his way of helping the people come into this new music and linking with sort of what I think of as high church.
And what had they had before the harmonium,
strings,
the organ?
Real folk instruments, strings, clarinets. Dave could speak to that better than I, actually. But what's wonderful about the battle that's going on there is that Fancy Day is a music teacher, and she comes in and is totally taken by the people and by the sound. And unto, you know, maybe much to the dismay of the parson, actually sides with the people.
Fancy Day, Mary Casey's character in The Christmas Revels, what a name, just absolutely wonderful. As the mechanical organ comes in, maybe to replace some old traditions, but old tradition strong and alive here on Christmas Eve. It's not all sacred there. Church meets tavern here as well. We'll go out of this segment with How Happy's the Man, a convivial drinking song found in the manuscripts of Thomas Hardy, arranged by our guest Dave Townsend and Charles Spicer. We're looking at the Christmas revels and listening to, you can join us, what's the picture these songs bring to mind for you? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're reveling on this Christmas Eve with the Christmas Revels, an annual celebration around the country of the winter solstice and this year, Old English Christmas. Behind me right there, while shepherds watch their flocks by night, you can join the conversation. What's your singing tradition this time of year? When the days are short and the snow is deep, do you get Old Englishy or something else? Scandinavian, Armenian, Georgian? Something from the sound of a Mexican village, maybe you'd love to hear. We're at 1-800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And I've got a full studio here today. Mary Casey's been singing for us. Dave Townsend of the Mellstock Band in Southern England is here with his concertina. George Emlyn, music director for the Christmas Revels, and Patty Swanson, artistic director at the Revels, all here. 800-423-TALK. If you'd like to join us, let's go to South Carolina, Columbia, South Carolina, and Craig. Craig, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, Tom. I'm very much enjoying the program. And while I've never attended a Christmas Revels in Boston, I do have a recording of the Mellstock Band from a few years back. And I just wondered if the director of the Mellstock Band would talk a bit about the ensemble, and have recent recordings been made?
Dave Townsend, do tell.
Yeah, sure. The Mellstock Band has been going really since 1986, when we released an album called Under the Greenwood Tree, and we've done various recording projects since then, and various things involving radio and television and so forth. Our most recent album's called Glad Tidings, which we recorded two or three years ago, which is Christmas Carols, and that has been on sale at the Revels in the foyer there, and before that we had a couple of albums. One called The Dance at the Phoenix, which includes some of the poetry of Thomas Hardy, as well as a mixture of songs, dance tunes, and various other kinds of music.
Your members are drawn from southern England. I'm reading Oxford, Taunton, Dorset. And what's this business with the snake?
Snake. The serpent is an important part of the band. This is Phil Humphreys who plays the serpent. It's a great instrument for the radio, really, because you have to describe it.
Please describe it. I mean,
seeing is believing. It's snake-shaped. It's a double S bend. It's made out of wood covered in leather, so the instrument is completely black. It doesn't look like any other known instrument.
It's a horn, then?
It is really a horn. It's blown with a cupped mouthpiece like a brass instrument, but it has finger holes as if it was a bassoon or even a recorder, and requires great skill to play in tune at all. Phil is a complete master of the instrument. He's probably one of the top three or four players in the world, and we're very, very pleased to have him as a member of the Mellstock Band.
You also got a great bass clarinet up there. Looked taller than most of the children in the children's chorus.
Oh, that's right. That's a member of the Revels company who plays bass clarinet on one of the carols. He's a great guy to have around. The rest of the lineup is, we've got the oboe, we've got the clarinet, me on the concertina, and we're joined by a trombone, also from the Revels company, and a fiddle player. So we have a really good band on stage.
Now, how are you feeling your reception in the United States compared to the UK this year? I mean, these days, are Americans, do they seem more or less drawn to this traditional music than your countrymen?
Well, I think everybody's been really responding very, very well to what the band's doing. Over here it's been great. We've had a terrific welcome. We've had a lovely time over here. Around the UK, at this time of year, we would normally be doing our own Christmas tour around various venues, large and small, right across England, celebrating Christmas and putting on our own performances. And we find that each year we're able to get a good tour together for Christmas. So there is quite a degree of interest in the music, and more people who are participating as well and learning how to sing the old West Gallery carols and playing the instruments and dancing the dances.
West Gallery carols. What is West Gallery? George, Dave, how do you define it?
Well, in the old Anglican churches, the old Episcopal churches in England, the altar would always be on the east side of the church, and the west end of the church, they would characteristically build a gallery in which the singers could sit, because it's a great place to project the sound down the church. So the term West Gallery music was coined mainly, really, by Thomas Hardy. I think it was being used by other writers around about the time to describe an older style, which was replaced by what we think of as modern-day hymn singing, or present-day hymn singing, what we think of as traditional hymns, really replaced an earlier tradition, which was much more free and easy, had lots of odd bits of counterpoint, and often written by local composers, and they survived more in the Christmas carolling tradition. These tunes were passed down as tunes of Christmas carols when they were no longer being sung in the churches, and these traditions survive in England in various areas, down in the West Country, Padstow in Cornwall, in the north of England.
Lots of audience participation in the revels tradition, and no matter what the theme, what the year, Dona Nobis Pacem, give us peace in Latin, around that always shows up. It gets to the heart of the sort of community building piece of this. Let's listen. This again is from this is a 2008. This is brand new recording of the audience taking it on around in the moment. Dona Nobis Pacem. To sit in the midst of this. I was reading Yo-Yo Ma recently, who has his own Christmas album out this year with a couple of versions of this very tune on it, maybe inspired by you all, but talking about being swept away, sitting there, doing the round with strangers at the revels, George.
This is a wonderful family tradition for a lot of people, including Yo-Yo Ma and his family, and he was wonderful enough to credit us in the liner notes as having been the inspiration for the album, simply because it's meant so much to him to be able to participate in this and get swept up in that joy.
Let's take a call from Rockport, Massachusetts. John, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hey, hi. George. Hey, Patty. You cannot overstate how important the sense of community is, both among the audience, even for newcomers. They're kind of swept up in that. Patty always weaves the theme of communal experience on the stage, even though there's the sort of normal community squabbles and things like that. But as a former chorus member and having participated on some of the recordings, it's woven through the volunteers as well who sing with that. And I want to thank Patty and George for that, and maybe they could address all those themes.
It's a human endeavor, but the sort of wrapping it all up in song, it's hard not to be swept away by the beauty of it.
I think the word community is a bit overused. But I think that it's a very real thing. It's a very real thing that happens in these moments in the theater. And one doesn't want to come in with that expectation, come on in and we guarantee a sense of community. It's just something that sweeps over you or infiltrates your being. Mm-hmm. And it goes out beyond the walls of the theater. I think that the people who have experienced the revels and have experienced singing together in a theater, share that experience, and it's a very broad and deep kind of communion.
Let's go to Roberta in Beverly, Massachusetts. Roberta, you're on the air.
Yes, hello.
Hi.
I've been attending revels for 25 years, and I think the caller just before me said it all so beautifully, but it's the high point of my year, and dancing through the hall to Lord of the Dance. So the whole thing, I attended in the blizzard last year, and there weren't too many of us. But it was as wonderful as always.
Roberta, for you, is it about the religious association? Is it about the seasonal? Is it about the traditional, this sort of feeling it coming down across centuries? What?
Oh, it's a mixture, but mostly the traditional, and knowing that on this dark day with darkness gathering outside, I'm in there reveling with all these wonderful people, singing and dancing, and the sense of history is important. So it's just a highlight of my year, and I wanted to say that and say thank you.
That's great to hear. Let's see if Mary Casey and Dave Townsend will perform another piece for us. We've got one, Arise and Hail the Sacred Day, carol, church band style, West Gallery style, as Dave Townsend was saying, duet folk carol, maybe out of a region like Sussex, shall we?
Arise and hail the sacred day, cast all the cares of life away. Cast all the cares of life away, and thoughts of earthly things. This day to cure our deadly woes, this day to cure our deadly woes. The Sun of Righteousness arose, with healing in his wings. With healing in his wings. This day to cure our deadly woes, this day to cure our deadly woes. The Sun of Righteousness arose, with healing in his wings, with healing in his wings. Then let us with the angels join, and praise the glorious power divine. And praise the glorious power divine with alleluia high. With endless thanks to God above, with endless thanks to God above, in showing forth his boundless love to all eternity. To all eternity. With endless thanks to God above, with endless thanks to God above, in showing forth his boundless love to all eternity. To all eternity.
Mary Casey and Dave Townsend live with us right here with Arise and Hail the Sacred Day. Beautiful, just beautiful. Thank you so much. Patty, it's not all sweetness and light in this performance. There's bloody battle on the stage. St. George, the dragon, and all sorts of foes slain.
That's right. That's a traditional element of revels. There.
In good humor, I guess, but even so,
well,
describe
mostly,
it for us.
Yes, but a mummer's play, you know, sometimes Peter Brook, the famous English theatre director, says that the closer you approach to the mysteries, the cruder it becomes.
Meaning
that when you get down to the real essentials of life and death, of the great mysteries of things which, you know, are central to humanity, poetry is all very well, but in a strange way, a very simple, unadorned way of looking at it is best. And you see this in folk performances. You know, he was talking about one in Persia, but
so you've got a little play within the play where you have your St. George, your knight,
right,
your hero who has to face the Turk and face the this.
He faces, and it's a hero combat play. Mm-hmm. The two heroes get up and they you know, boast about how clever and good they are and good in battle. In this one, which is interestingly written by Thomas Hardy for the most part, I've certainly tinkered around with it in the folk tradition.
Did he bring the slapstick in, or was that your addition?
Well, the slapstick...
There's a lot of whacking in the rear end with broadswords and...
Yeah, that's, I think, brought by the actors.
Okay.
And it would have been in his day as well. And he was really just recording what he saw. This is folk material.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that's constant about it is that there is a death and a rebirth, and that's at the center of it. And that's where the mystery is. And traditionally, it's not, you know, given any great drama. In non-classical plays like this, you tend, if something is going to happen, you say it's going to happen in the future, so there'll be no surprises.
Right.
And then when it happens, you take note of it, But the death demands some kind of magic to bring him back to life. So they try science. They bring the doctor on.
Right.
And the doctor has all his pills and potions and enemas and so on. And
another touch of the modern, but not very modern.
Right, that's right. But they tend not to work. In this case, actually, the doctor does end up bringing them back to life, which is not always the case. Sometimes it's a fool that does that. Or in a Russian play that we did, it was Mother Russia, you know, who comes and suckles all the dead bodies, and they all come back to life.
This world, this word, this character, fool, comes up again and again in your description. Remind us, the role of the fool in this world.
The fool is, we talked about this threshold, you know, they sometimes mention the fool in the world of the liminal fool, the limen being the threshold.
Mm-hmm.
He stands between the world of magic and the world that we live in.
Mm.
For the king, you know, he stands between the lowest of the low and the highest of the high. He's the one
that can talk to the king
and tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this sort of magical shamanistic quality about the fool. But again, it's not played. You know, the fool is always low humor. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nothing missing.
Low and good, fun, right. Humor.
But, yeah, he comes up with the magic mistletoe that actually brings people back to life.
Mary Kay, so, you know, Thomas Hardy was famous for his stoic pessimism, his sense of tragedy in human life. And yet somehow in this one, Under the Greenwood Tree, it's got class tension, it's got betrayal, it's got the fighting over lovers, But at least as you play it, this is not all pessimism and tragedy here. Even in the face of the modern onslaught coming, the music, the traditional music, stands up somehow.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I think music revives us, right?
Mm-hmm.
So music stands alone as a language that I think survives all onslaughts. I mean, it's the music that, if you look at any tradition, you look at slavery and the role of music in maintaining, as your show was talking about earlier,
mm-hmm.
but maintaining hope.
Mm-hmm.
I think when you can sing, there's hope. You know, if you take away somebody's, you know, power to sing, you take away the voice. That is the last stand, really. You know?
And when you stand on that stage in the Revels, bringing these songs back to life, and who knows how many hundred years they've been around, do you feel that strength of history and the hope in that history behind you as you deliver them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think singing, for me, singing is like, it's lifeblood. And I think for people who have ever been told not to sing, you know, I call them victims of early childhood music abuse, you know, the ones
yes,
who were
indeed.
Told not to sing at the back. Like, that's tragic to me, absolutely tragic. It's just it opens people to all kinds of possibilities. So, yes, it's very empowering.
Well, that's a tragedy surmounted every year in the Christmas Revels, whether here in Boston or around the country. Mary Casey, thank you so much for being here today.
Very welcome. Thanks for having us.
On a Christmas Eve. And Dave Townsend of the Mellstock Band, thank you so much for coming over the pond and being here.
Thanks very much.
George Emlyn, Patty Swanson, Patrick Swanson with the Christmas Revels. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Tom.
It's great to be here.
We'll go out with the Sussex Mummers Carol, traditional carol sung as the ending to the folk play in Horsham, Sussex, tradition of the Revels to sing at the end of each performance. A good song for Christmas Eve. Thanks to all. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.